right, ladies and gents, I'm your host Sully. Joining me for another round of Spielberg themed discussions is the one, the only, John Holman. Welcome.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. So yeah, we discussed last time on, you know, we had already done one special on just Spielberg in general, and then we decided, hey, let's talk about his war movie specials, and then let's do one on also, you know, his free movies that dealt with aliens. But it's like, no, but for this, let's just talk about just the overall founding of Amblin Entertainment, which he founded with producer couple Frank Marshall and Kathleen Kennedy. It's just like, it's owned by Amblin Partners now, and it's kind of worked side by side with DreamWorks for a while. But man, you know, it's just, anytime you see that ET logo, and you just know instantly, okay, this is a big deal. I see him on the side of every other CBS program now, and Steven doesn't even set foot in the room. He's just, you know, signing off on the paperwork. And we see,
that's it.
I mean, we see so many other just like obscure, like short films and 3D animations, and that logo pop up, and I'm just like, whoa, okay, whoa, this is a big, it's not just expensive, but it's a big deal. Whatever it is. How did you get into a lot of just kind of these various big and small screen like productions? Were you just like a big film buff already, or was it just kind of part of the deal?
Oh man, ever since I was a kid, you know, like you say, the Amblin Entertainment logo with E.T. and Henry, you know what I mean? Going across the sky. Mm-hmm. I was a huge Spielberg fan growing up, of course, you know, with E.T. and, you know, everything else, everything, the you know, everything he produced, Sugarland Express and Jaws.
You're going way, way back. Know. Yeah. Sugarland does not get enough attention at all. And you're just like, what the hell, guys? He did other blockbusters besides Jaws in the 70s.
Everything, let me tell you. And he even comes to the forefront now talking about how Jaws was, how he was, you know, the unfortunate events that stemmed from him making that movie. And I love the fact that he's come forth and said all, you know, that he was irresponsible.
Yeah, he's never pretended to be immortal. And that's the other thing, too. No. People every once in a while will try and smack talk him. And it's like, nah, dude, he's this guy making a living who's human, you know?
Yeah,
he wants humanity and everything. And if he's going to just go for fun, he'll just flat out fess up. Hey, this is a movie to take your kids to. And then movie for the adults, it's coming your way this December. It's just not this month.
Yeah, no kidding. You know, Spielberg, but, you know, like we were saying, is that he's ultimately a household name. I mean, if you know.
He didn't plan on that. No one plans on that. He was already, again, just like many of these guys, he snuck onto Universal a lot, and then he convinced the big wigs, hey, I can direct, you know, your mystery show and do a good job.
Yeah, anything. Color Purple, you know what I mean? Empire of the Sun. I mean,
and he gave so many of the other drive-in guys a good chance at it. I mean, I'm sure. I mean, we'll get to it. So Amblin's, you know, various franchises include the Gremlins saga for Warner Brothers, Back to the Future, right. Don Bluth, Slam Before Time, and American Tell, and Spielberg's own Jurassic Park for Universal. Roger Rabbit for Walt Disney, and the Men in Black saga for Sony.
Yep.
And it was interesting looking at their various theme park rides. I was like, yeah, I definitely did the Men in Black and Jurassic Park ride at Orlando, Florida. Universal. I didn't know they had a Twister ride. I didn't know they had an E.T. ride, but that doesn't surprise me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
there's apparently a Gremlins Invasion ride. I never went to the Australian Warner Brothers Movie World. I didn't know that was a thing, but that's awesome.
I would have. Or Gremlins.
Absolutely. So some of their other productions include Joe versus the Volcano. Obviously, every other movie Spielberg's done, but also Balto, Small Soldiers, Mask of Zorro, Memoirs of a Geisha, The 100-Foot Journey, A Dog's Purpose, as well as The Turning, but probably some of the better ones that many people are probably familiar with are probably Poltergeist, Arachnophobia, Young Sherlock Holmes, the Twilight Zone movie, Batteries Not Included, the animated film Monster House.
Oh man, the piece he did in Twilight Zone, the movie, was that was my favorite one too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you're remaking one of the classic episodes with the gremlin on the plane. Yeah. So,
With Poltergeist with Tobe Hooper. I mean, Tobe Hooper.
Exactly. Yeah. He gives Tobe Hooper and Joe Dante, these B-movie guys, a big deal. You know, Tobe Hooper, he's like, hey, you know, that this is totally your kind of a movie that I think you would like to do, even though it's a bigger budget. Joe Dante, he was pretty much just forthcoming. He's like, out of all the Jaws knockoffs, you're the only one who showed any creativity with Piranha, so I want you to do Interspace.
I don't know, man. Piranha 2 was pretty lit.
Oh, well, yeah, that's true. But that was years after. So he has a lot of like Henry James like adaptations, so that's why he was attached to the Haunting remake and because they had the book rights to that, that's why later his company Amblin worked on the excellent Haunting of Hill House for Netflix with Mike Flanagan. And this is kind of something I didn't realize, because you don't see the logo unless you sit for the credits.
No kidding. And I guess they're going to be releasing a bunch of things on Netflix. I never even knew.
Yeah, totally. Because Tommy was a really cool procedural that was on CBS that had Edie Falco from Oz and The Sopranos, and it didn't last long. But I couldn't believe how it just really wasn't all that advertised. But when they got into animation, like outside of Don Bluth and like for Warner Brothers, where they were doing with Tiny Toons and Animaniacs, that's where I was just like, okay, whoa. So they're doing more than just, you know, the Batman animated show and just other stuff. Like it's its own household name, to compliment your point. It's like, if they're involved, like they're doing more than just signing papers and putting their names on it. It's like they believe it'll actually be a deal.
Exactly. It's like, putting the money in the hands of Cameron, you know, with Avatar. They know he's going to get the money back. They know it's coming.
Mm-hmm. it took so much effort, but it happened. And what's funny is half the time, like, I'll look at movie reviewers and I can tell they really don't even realize that Spielberg's company is like involved in this, but it makes sense. So it's now owned by Amblin Partners, but it's just interesting how, they basically just choose whether it's the DreamWorks label or the Amblin Entertainment logo. But I didn't realize they were involved with 7 Days in Entebbe, The House with a Clock in Its Walls, First Man, Green Book, On the Basis of Sex, Captain State, 1917, and even Dark Waters. But it makes sense. I was especially tickled though by Stillwater and Finch, because again, those are both atypical kind of movies that could either appeal to a mainstream crowd or an Oscar crowd. But On the Basis of Sex and The Good House are interesting, because like those are just like kind of sleeper films. Like they're easygoing crowd pleasers, but you don't hear enough people talk about them enough. But I was just guffawing at Come Play, because that was kind of just a cool horror movie that some people saw.
I have not seen it.
Okay, so long story short, it stars Britta herself from Community, Jillian Jacobs, and but it was just so funny, because like it was advertised like by a few reviewers that were like, this is like what would happen if you mix in the Babadook or a Spielberg premise with the Babadook. and I just was guffawing, because I'm like, yeah, well, it's an Amblin production, so I'm sure they gave some notes. Probably the most unusual one that just got up on my roster was, I was listening to the Psychiatrists Are In podcast, which deals with the cast and crew of Psych having amusing memories. And they brought on director Jay Chun, Kreskar, who you might know from the, you know, Super Troopers and Broken Lizard movies. And
oh, wow. OK,
he had a hysterical story about how he had, when they were doing the interview with him, he's like, I just wrapped Easter Sunday, which has comedian Joe Coy in his first movie appearance and has a Filipino all-star cast. And he was just guffawing. He's like, I get this call from Spielberg's people. I don't even meet Spielberg until like just a random email. And he doesn't have any other notes other than you're doing a great job. And and movie stars don't wear hats. That's his only notes. And I'm like, that's funny.
What? Like, hey, just, I'd be happy with that email.
Yeah, that checks out. It's just so funny how it just kind of just goes and just waves where you're just like, what?
Yeah, no kidding. What?
Oh, man. Altogether, it is just wild how we see, again, he pretty much took over TNT. I'll just say that, just with Hamlin, like, I just lost track of everything. Like, I just knew it was going to be a big deal.
When did he take control of, when did that happen exactly?
Basically, Hamlin signed with TNT, but, like, just every other year, like, because Band of Brothers, I think, was, even though that was a Playtone thing for Tom Hanks' company, Spielberg still oversaw it, because it was very much like Private Ryan, but, like, like every other year on like TNT, there would always be like an epic mini series. And really, I think it made a big, big impression by like, basically, if it wasn't going to be on HBO, they were going to do something for TNT that was safe to air on there. And the big one there probably was their TV show Falling Skies, because that was him kind of re-exploring a lot of the same kind of Close Encounters, War of the Worlds type stuff.
Yeah.
And that ran for about 5 years. And I just could never. Just looking at the Amblin television thing, I actually didn't realize that they produced Resident Alien, that Dark Horse Comics thing with Alan Took. But now that makes sense, because it's a very outrageous show.
What? I never even knew that.
They were supposed to bring out an animated Gremlins cartoon show for Cartoon Network, but they kept just kind of pushing it back, and now it's set to be part of the Acme Night block. So hopefully it comes out this year. So probably the biggest deal this last year was probably the Halo show that was supposed to be premiere on Showtime, and then they decided, we got to give a reason to for people to subscribe to Paramount Plus. And I will just say, I saw so many people boycotting it by having only seen a few episodes or just before it got announced. And I'm like, guys, they had the actual, you know, gaming company, you know, oversee this, do all the sound effects and animation.
I've been scared. I was scared to watch it. I still haven't seen it. You know, I of course, you know, I'm a hardcore gamer, so I played all the Halo games, but I heard too many bad things from too many people I trusted about even wanting to watch it. Doesn't mean I'm not going to.
I think you dig it. I saw one person freaking out. Oh, he takes off his helmet. I'm like, yeah, but it's not like a Judge Dredd thing where they do it just for the sake of it. They just did it just to show him behind the scenes how he's being brainwashed by the fascist government. But that's the other thing, too. It seemed like people hated them talking about that thing. It's like, well, if you just go with all the nameless aliens, then it'll just be a bland Star Wars Buck Rogers shoot 'em up. So. They're just trying to do all kinds of things. No, I can like all kinds of things, but I just figured when I saw it, it pretty much was just a blend of all the genres. There's something for everybody. There's something for the Star Wars crowd. There's something for the aliens and Predator and Star Trek gang. But I think gamers will like it. I just noticed a lot of the gamers who were just talking smack about it just seemed like they were just never going to be entertained by it anyway. So I was just like,
well, you know what? The gaming crowd definitely is a little, you know, they get a little crazy over things and start, you know, they want it to be 100% source material. And unfortunately, you know, when you don't, I mean, there's not exactly a whole bunch.
It's kind of like with all these other blockbusters is like, I think Forbes magazine did an article on it on like there's franchise fatigue. It's like, would you hate it now if you, there weren't 20 others of it already?
Oh, no. And that's the thing. Like you said, the franchise fatigue just gets, it just takes it right out of the mix. I mean, like,
Walking Dead. Retrospects 20 years later.
Yeah.
Walking Dead's a good example. Later. Yeah.
Now, what was that animated show? Was that the Gremlins Secrets of the Mogwai?
Yeah. It was supposed to be on HBO Max and Cartoon Network, but it was like announced in like 21, and then I saw a preview of it in 2022, and then I was just like, when is this damn thing coming out?
Jurassic World Camp Cretaceous, and
this year we're finally getting the with Tom Hanks's Playtone, the follow up to their Band of Brothers in the Pacific, Masters of the Air, which deals with just the World War II,
That's exciting.
Bomber pilots.
That's exciting. And you said Masters of the Air, right?
Yeah, Masters of the Air. I've been waiting.
I love Band of Brothers. I absolutely love Band of Brothers.
I think everyone does typically. I'll encounter people who haven't seen it, but I mean, it's just interesting to me how it kind of made people remember, hey, miniseries are still a good thing. You just have to make use of all, 8 episodes. And now they've kind of been doing a lot more of it lately, just going back to the whole 13 episode seasons,
Yeah, well, people are seeing, and now that the gaming world is starting to get their just due, because The Last of Us is coming out, and that's going to blow people out of the water. That's what they need to do. They need to throw the money into these, like they did. Okay. Like if they start putting the money into the gaming world, like they did with comics, then they're going to blow people out of the water. And because a lot of people, especially during the pandemic, no one knew, anything about games. They still thought games were like Pac-Man. And then they went and they bought their PS5 or whatever. And they're like, oh, wait, what?
Mm-hmm.
And that, like you said, with the Assassin's Creed movie, it was, I liked it because I'm kind of biased about it, but at the same time, you're going to be able to tell the story, like you said, with a miniseries. You put that in a series like Netflix is going to be doing, and then they can get it into the story. They can really let everybody know what this is all about.
Exactly. Someone who complains that, but it's a matter of, does it appeal to most people, or is it just hard to just market?
Exactly. And you put the money into the marketing and you get a good director and some, cats to fill the shoes of all the characters, and you're gonna lay something down. And that excites me.
Right?
Hell yeah.
Oh man. I do like kind of like how when you see a Dick Wolf or Michael Mann or just and Antoine Fuqua, he's been doing a lot of TV. I just always cheer up when I see someone who was in one of their movies just still is on that same just casting call, and they're making them be a recurring character or a guest spot one of their shows. So just for those who want to know about, this other stuff Amblin has produced for TV, it includes Amazing Stories, the Back to the Future cartoon, the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles, Sequest, ER, of course, Earth 2.
Sequest, man.
Mm-hmm. And Pinky and the Brain was another one, the Men in Black cartoon.
Yep.
I did not realize, I knew that they had produced, again, Terra Nova and The River, but I didn't realize that they were a co-production with The Americans.
Mm.
And Roswell, New Mexico, and some of that other CW crap that's kind of out now, but they also did Brave New World for Peacock, which didn't last too long. But it's interesting how basically they've just had a few others that kind of just slipped through the cracks. Like, I knew about Under the Dome and the Whispers and never saw them, but I just knew they were a thing briefly. But one thing that I found kind of funny was I remember seeing a report about a guy who, you know, won a blacklist project where basically he, you know, they bought his idea and basically he gave notes to the writer's room. He could interact, but he couldn't change the overall thing because something had to go in the can. But I just thought it was interesting how Extant, you know, became kind of a hit show on CBS for 2 years with Halle Berry. And you know, that's kind of getting a second life now that it's on, you know, the CBS Paramount app. But I just thought it was interesting because I just knew so much about it, but again, I never had a chance to actually see it. But then that was even more interesting because then it came at that rare time where then movie stars were doing small screen TV and it was all cool now after being kind of a where you go when your career just doesn't go anywhere. Then I saw, you know, just anytime there was like a sci-fi show, I was just never surprised when I would just see that logo just pop up at the end, because I was like, yeah, it's a big deal, because they're looking for that thing that just gets you. And, you know, if the network still screws up or doesn't market it, then, you know, so what. But like, yeah, Public Morals, that was a cool kind of 40s or 50s, I can't remember the exact era, but it was just a cool show. And, you know, it had Edward Burns from Private Ryan, and it was kind of just kind of following in Mob City, but not just as like TNT was doing the whole let's do a throwback to old school kind of noirish theme stuff with some gritty stuff for a mature audience. And then they did a one on the Minority Report, you know, based on the book and movie of the same name, and it was bad. I tried so bad.
I haven't even seen
we barely it. Got for free episodes, and I was just like, no, I'm tapping out. It just doesn't have anything appealing. The cast is doing their job, the visuals are there, just whatever you put in the can just is very unimpressive. But they did cancel another show that I thought was really good that Amblin produced called Reverie, and that kind of dealt with some, again, virtual simulation. It was kind of similar to The Cell and kind of The Matrix, but kind of doing its own kind of thing. How does this person heal by finding all those virtual realities? And so since I'm a cyberpunk junkie, I ate it up, and I was like, why is this not getting any attention? This has a giant cast.
I'm sad about a lot of things like that. Mm-hmm. When something doesn't get all the, you know, it's like you're sitting there going, this is absolutely amazing, folks.
We'll return after these messages.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsy, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR. We add them to our queues. We wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters Podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide, all across the globe. We are in the US, we are in the UK, we are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan. We're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
Dragon Ball Z, One Piece, Naruto, all things that we love, all manga that were originally published in the legendary magazine Weekly Shonen Jump.
But not every series can run for 300 chapters and have a hit anime. This is David.
This is Jordan.
We're the hosts of Shonen Flop. Each episode, we look at manga that ran in Jump that didn't quite make it.
We discuss what it did wrong, what it did right, how the series could have turned itself around, and ultimately, was it a flop or not?
Run all your favorite podcast apps, and you can find us at shonenflop.com.
Keep on flopping, floppers.
And you don't have the money for all the...
you don't have the money. Otherwise you would. oh, Dolly. And I would lose track just because Cartoon Network and all the other channels would reshow a lot of the Warner Brothers aired material. Because, you know, there was Fox Kids and then, but Kids WB, that was a big deal. And I forgot that they owned part of the Casper the Friendly Ghost saga, but I just was always just blown away by it. It's like, okay, these Animaniacs, Pinky and the Brain, and all these Tiny Toons, they're all in the same universe. It's the Warner Brothers verse.
Yep. And so you know what I was sad about? I was sad about the river, man. The river. I really wanted to see more of the river.
It was, again, you know, it came out of that awkward time when you had to be as crazy, you know, as, again, Lost, Battlestar Galactica, 24, or even Jericho. Mm-hmm. And much like Jericho, it just would always, it didn't matter how you scheduled it, you know, there was just too much at that point where people either had, you know, they either had TV, but they may or may not have a TiVo or a DVR that they could digitally record it.
Yep. Yeah. Plus, I think the river was a little too out there for people. A lot of people don't like too. I mean, you start going too out of the box and they don't know what to do. It seems like a lot of folks.
You don't know how much of it is. And that kind of launched Jason Blum's career before he formed Blumhouse.
And you were talking about Falling Skies. Was that you? I was talking to about Falling Skies about just now.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Falling Skies. That's right. TNT.
Yeah, it was a big deal. TNT, you know, was always kind of being the taking over my summer every other year. And
they got a lot of shows.
I haven't really watched that channel in quite a while because they kind of have been going into rerun mode, but. I'm sure there'll be something sooner or later. I mean, FX is always turning out something, and now they have the option of putting it on Hulu versus on their regular channel. But see, people are forgetting that that wasn't an option. You know, that was before everything got oversaturated and COVID hit. And but what's funny is Amblin was behind this one contest. Contest show that was like on Fox, and I'm sure you heard of On the Lot. It was basically Spielberg and his pals would judge who would be the next director. It was making reality TV kind of fun, but again, because of whoever the hell scheduled it, it just never worked out. And I knew only about it because Entertainment Weekly did like just such a big take on this, like this should have been the next big reality show that, you know, goes on
easily.
Whoever the hell scheduled it just really fucked it up to where you're just like, so did it ever have a chance in hell? Because that sounds interesting, unlike other reality shows where they want you to fail just for the sake of ratings or being mean.
I know. Well, Carrie Fisher and Wes Craven, Penny Marshall, it's like
they're trying to be like Project Greenlight, and yet they
these are serious names, man. I mean, it's like. And then, of course, you know, Carrie Fisher, you can't be doing that now. So that's sad. But
Spielberg even talked about it. And he's like, I don't know why it didn't take off. And it's just scheduling it just must have really.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Some of the shit out there right now is just absolutely ridiculous that people hook onto. But you got, like we were talking about, something good like this comes along. And it's like people are going to bite on this like pancakes. And then it's like. Oh shit!
Why wouldn't you? If it's sliced bread, why not take it? Yeah.
Yep. Why not?
I mean, I've only seen parts of the logo and everything, and it looked fine. So they must have really just scheduled it really crappily.
Yeah, I guess so. That sucks. I totally forgot about that one.
I mean, it's not uncommon. I mean, I did hear bad things about Terra Nova as well, and like writers kept quitting. And really? John Cassar, who was one of the lead producers and directed about three episodes, you know, was really intrigued by it. You know, it was a promising show. It was literally Stargate meets Jurassic Park. Yeah. And it was one of those where we dug the concept, but we thought the characters were kind of poorly written. But you kept watching because you're a fan of the genre, and it was kind of much like Sequest. You know, it's like it's just a fun Sunday, you know, night show that happens to be on during the weekday.
Yeah. Well, when you, I mean, come on, man, when you're traveling 85 million years in the
you're
past,
going through a portal and yeah, you gotta go on a dinosaur
you're going
planet
somewhere, man.
And
yep.
Again, I think it was, you know, everything had to be like Battlestar or Lost. So it had some steep competition, but yeah, Kassar has, you know, done everything from 24 and Forever Night to now, you know, doing the Orville. And he described, you know, as like, he's thankful for any kind of employment and doesn't believe in talking smack, but he's like, that was hard because, you know, unlike Revolution where, or 24, where the rules were pretty straightforward, or
right,
the Orville, where they gave me more leniency and more, more freedom, is like, this was hard because basically I had 12 bosses to answer to.
Right.
And so I believe it because they were pretty inconsistent with just the whole timeline of the characters and everything. And there were times where it's like, well, that was a cool story, but those graphics, boy, howdy, that sucked. But so I think just kind of, but it could have gotten better. That was the other thing. So I think a lot of people, again, they're so brainwashed by, you know, just negative reality TV and just eating up just negativity. I wouldn't be surprised if they just they either want it all there right in front of them, or they just don't want it at all. And it deserved a it could have been really improved, but it was what it was. But kind of like the river, it kind of just came out at that awkward time. And
oh yeah, no, and it seems like, I don't know, a lot of people seem to, story doesn't seem to be as important as it once was, you know. And like the same people that used to say
I'm so tired of seeing people say I hate having to think. I'm like, well, you're gonna have to eventually.
No, it's ridiculous.
What does that mean?
No, it's like with Star Wars, when everybody was like, there's too much special effects in this, and then we have, you know, the Avengers now, and all the comic book movies, and it's like, well, and now they're like, they're perfectly okay with it now. Avatar, you know, now it's okay. You know, and like we were saying, people don't want to have to, they do want it right in front of them. They don't want to have to think too much. If they have to think too much, they're just going to flip the screen. They're going to.
Yeah. And then you're seeing people make contrarian opinions. It's like, you do realize this movie was never like this or that. It was never mindless. Oh,
right.
You'll see people complain when there's social commentary in a horror movie. I'm like, that's the whole basis of a horror show. It's supposed to show wrongdoings of society, and then like a sci-fi thing painted in a different light. But it is funny. You see people and it's like, oh, that's what you thought this was? Well, no, it was never like that. But I know there was an incident on, you know, I never saw much of Bull. It seemed acceptable. I just didn't like how it was kind of based on a Dr. Phil idea.
Which one?
Bull.
Oh, okay, okay.
That starred Michael Weatherly, who's best known as DiNozzo from NCIS. And I heard about there was kind of a scandal where there's like inappropriate talk that came off as sexual harassment, and it just seemed like Amblin didn't want to deal with it. They're like, oh, we can't bother with our main stars, so we're just going to fire the actress who has an issue with them. And it was one of those where it was like, yeah, I think had Spielberg been in the room, he would have actually done this more coherently.
I can almost guarantee that.
Because like, it was so, that was such a big issue that Amblin pushed out after season two. Like, they said, screw it, we're not producing your show anymore. if toxicity like this is going to happen. So the show's still been on. It's sixth season. It's been going on all last year, but I don't know. I don't even know who anyone who really watches it. I've heard people say it's okay, but I would see parts of it and be like, I just feel like there's already enough, you know, legal shows. See what this brings new to the table. I mean, I think at the end of the day, people just want Waverly to just come back to NCIS.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But what do I know? But yeah, they got a lot of the same writers and producers, so I'm not surprised when I see a lot of them attached to the ones. But yeah, the big surprise for me was I had no idea they were they were part of Red Band Society, the Americans, and the Borgias. But a lot of those are just co-productions, like everyone's splitting the bill. I forget that young Indiana Jones is part of Amblin. Because I always consider that just a Lucasfilm and Paramount venture, but
always. I mean, Luke, but at the same time, Spielberg. I mean, Spielberg was always close. I mean, those two came like in a package.
The George Lucas A Life book shed some real extra stories on what working with the non-union crew was like working overseas, especially when they shot the Shanghai Club and Temple of Doom. And basically Lucas, you know, I just always thought, hey, he was just a writer, you know, and just would come to the set. But no, he was basically also during Raiders, like assistant camera, you know, just a few second unit director for like the other movies. It's like, that's wild. So he would just like come in and just make sure they were just getting additional shots and coverage. It's like, that's wild.
Which book was this?
George Lucas, A Life. And I recommend it to everybody just because it just gives you a better idea of what, you know, Silicon Valley was before it was, you know, really Silicon Valley today. And just, I mean, there's already a good documentary on Industrial Light and Magic on Disney Plus, but like it gives you some other ideas on, again, his failed marriage to the editor gal, you know, Mary Lucas, who saved.
My grandmother lived in Belmarin Keys, which was right around the corner in Northern California from Lucas Road. His property was like 10 minutes away from where.
Oh, really?
I knew some people that got to go on his property, you know, and go to his theater and do all that. But it was, you know, from the sky is the only place I ever got to see it. It looked amazing. But
it has to be.
Yeah, it was, you know, I had some friends that worked with Lucas Sound and then LucasArts basically right before Disney booted them all out.
Oh, yeah. Just
booted them all out. They were working on a Force Unleashed 2, I think was the last thing.
And then they got into the argument whether it was canon or not. It's like I do like how this new. The canon thing, if there's any good thing that's come out of that toxic Star Wars back and forth arguments, has probably been that the fans themselves can still decide what is or isn't canon. I hate having to impose that lack of free will and saying, well, the studio considers it. It's like, well, James Bond fans kind of had this with Never Say Never Again, you know, and, and it's like, just because it was done outside of the main producers doesn't mean it's any less canon, you know. And if you want to even look at all the various movie and TV crossovers that have happened, is like, you don't have to ask permission, you know. Some stuff isn't an Easter egg, some stuff is actually legit meant to be part of the whole deal. If you want to even get started in the St. Elsewhere universe, that'll really hurt your head. But it's just even funnier how it's like, you don't have to ask permission, you can consider it a sequel. Regardless of whether it's in the box set or not. I mean, Steven DeSouza and Joel Silver reuse a lot of their same mini characters. So. Altogether, I mean, I think a lot of people are just like opening up to just. There's plenty to rediscover in this whole resume of stuff from Amblin, but it would be fun to do a poll on where did people first see this logo? Was it at one of the Blockbuster movies, or was it at, you know, watching reruns of Tiny Toon or Sequest?
Sequest, man. And Bull. Yeah, I'm looking at that now. I wasn't very familiar with Bull. Okay.
Right. Yeah, and I can't blame them.
I did not know that.
Yeah, wow. And my sister even followed that report for a while, and it was one of those, like, see, you know, shame on you for taking this stupid joke out of context, but shame on you for making the joke and then claiming, oh, you never made that joke, and then you incriminate yourself on the videotape saying that joke, and then it just becomes, well, the audience loves this actor, but that was stupid.
Yeah. And who was the guy in question? The
actors, Michael Weatherly, and he was getting an incident with Elijah Dushku, but it was one of those, like, I mean, you know, it wasn't enough to get him canceled, but it was enough to just, like, well, that's a character flaw. And
yeah, seriously though.
It was one of those, it was being talked about more than the show itself. So it's like, are people, and I do wonder about ratings. It's like, it seems like people know it's flawed, but I don't know how many of them take it lightly. And at the same time, you know that whoever works on it, you know, is definitely part of the viewer audience.
Right. And Bull went three seasons? Yeah, three seasons. Okay.
They produced the first two seasons, and it's in its sixth season now. I didn't even know that.
It's in its sixth, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I know. I couldn't believe it either.
Six seasons. Okay,
fucking seasons. that's where CBS kind of gets mocked, because it's kind of just the procedural channel. I mean, don't get me wrong, I watch the FBIs, but that's because it's a Dick Wolf thing. Why tune into this? Yeah. Overall, I mean, again, Amblin, I can't blame them for revisiting a lot of their new stuff and continuing Tiny Toons, and their rehash of Amazing Stories, I guess it didn't get picked up for another season, because it was just kind of, it came out when Apple wasn't being watched right away.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, altogether, I think they'll keep finding new venues. I'm sure it'll be a matter of time before they take over Peacock or produce something for Disney.
Right.
A lot of documentary shows that I still want to see, including ones that have directors talking about 40s and 50s directors who covered war topics. That looks interesting.
Yeah, that does look interesting. Oh, yeah. I was just looking at the Amazing Stories. There's a few things on here I had no idea.
I always got it mixed up with, like, the storyteller.
The what now?
I always got Amazing Stories mixed up with the storyteller.
Oh, shit. That's okay. I got Laurel Canyon mixed up with something else entirely as well. What the hell? Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Completely inappropriate, but whatever. Damn.
Oh, man. Altogether, in pop culture, how many of these would you say are really big with viewers? Which ones will they probably be more familiar with, probably?
You think in pop culture?
Yeah, you think it'd be Tiny Toons, Sequest, or even Falling Skies?
Unfortunately, yeah, Tiny Toons, definitely Falling Skies, like you say. People love sci-fi, man. And they don't even There doesn't even have to be a story. There can just be explosions and special effects. You know, like...
Oh, that's every movie. Look at Fast and Furious.
Yeah, no, they're about eye candy. It's about how many explosions, you know, Michael Bay style. It's like how many, like we were talking about, people don't want to think, man. It's kind of like when they go and they're watching, like when Crouching Tiger was released and people were complaining about the subtitles. People don't want to even have to read. Okay. They want to sit there. They want the bombs going off. They want to eat their popcorn. They want to leave and go, wow.
They want to be assholes, bring their babies because they're too cheap to hire a sitter and let you enjoy the movie.
No, seriously. You know, so it's really hard.
I
have
lost track of how many of that. I got carded around late 2010s for a movie that was rated R for language. I was like, seriously? So these same assholes can let you take your six-year-old in to watch Saw 9000, but I gotta get carded for a movie that, you know, it's a matter of how much will be tolerable. It's like, I'd rather see a rude comedy with words you shouldn't know at that young an age versus, you know, see an extremely violent or very perverted movie.
Oh, man. In 2017 or 2007, we all went to see Halloween, you know, Zombies Halloween. And this woman comes in and she's got four little kids, and I'm talking like 4, 5, 6. And I'm turning around and I'm like, hey, how you guys doing? And she goes, happy Halloween, like that. And I'm like, this is a whole different Halloween. And then, you know, 10, 15 minutes into it, they were shuffling out of there. And they're going to not let you in for bad language, you know, because they're, you know, shifty language, but they're going to let a whole family into Halloween. Okay.
Right. It, some of it almost seems like intentional sabotage. Hey, it's just like, okay, so the big movie you can take people to see, but you got to card them all the other independent movies or other stuff movies you hear are controversial. And it's just like, I knew plenty of even film buffs who were my age at that time, you know, 16 to 18, and they went to all the art house theaters as much as the big budget movies. They lived and thrived on movies on their Fridays after school. And people assume, oh, because your age must not be, you know, mature enough. It's like, there's plenty who get it. They maybe shouldn't watch it, but that's what it is.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, seriously, man. I miss those days. I miss being able to go into catch a double features with Beverly Hills Cop and Pee-wee's Big Adventure. You know what I mean?
You're right. Just the cult movies, the very definition of a cult movie. And cult movie seems to be jumbled now. Now people seem to think trash like Sharknado. I'm like, no. I'm not talking intentionally bad.
Sharknado, man. It's amazing how many people flock to see these movies. It's absolutely.
Oh, yeah. And now we kind of got wars with, is it on streaming versus this? And I'm just like, well, yes.
Who cares?
It's pretty much the same as you renting a direct-to-video popular movie like, you know, the Puppet Master series, or seeing a series of made-for-TV mysteries. Is like, well, however it gets released, that's how it gets released.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, people will say, I've never seen this or that. It's like, anything can be good if they apply it. It might be infamous for that, but you can just say that just about any other big budget movie, it might be bad.
Hell yes.
Where did all the money go? Well, it went to all the stars.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing, you know, it's just like my whole fucking problem with the older gaming movies. It's like, you know, when you give something a $25 budget.
Yeah.
What the fuck do you think it's going to be like?
Mm-hmm.
Crap. You know, like Cinderella 3.
Wait. That's a movie?
Hey, man, that's direct-to-video, you know? That's how Disney does it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I know what you're talking about. Yeah. Oh, boy. Well, and, yeah.
But Minority Report, Red Band Society, hell yeah. Like I said, I want the river back. Shit, I'd even love to see Terra Nova. You know what I mean? I'd like to see him jump back into that. Do it. Why not?
I mean, yeah. or at least even do a reboot. Just take the idea and just say inspired by this earlier dinosaur show.
Or, oh, yeah. Yeah, or whatever.
I know Sequest went on to Peacock. That was one of the first classic Universal shows they remastered and put on there. Yeah. I was like, that's awesome. Cause
that went over to Peacock? Okay.
I think so, yeah.
Nice.
Let me check if it's still on there.
And I don't use Peacock at all.
I don't either. I'm
Paramount, just by it.
I like Paramount. I'm not into Shudder. Yeah. I like a lot of free stuff that's on Tubi.
Yep.
It's on Peacock, but it requires a subscription. So there's where I say bullshit. Not doing it.
Yeah, that's what I said.
I'm better off waiting for something like Heroes and Icons or MeTV to show reruns, you know, because and all the other shows that they had on there, I was like, see, they're on TV all the time. You could literally save money by just, if you already got cable, just recording them, you know.
But, I want to see a reboot of the others. I want them to do a new series and throw some money down.
For the longest time, I thought that was part of their deal, but it wasn't. But Peacock has a few new shows that you can watch for free that are exclusives. I'm like, good, because it looks good. I like the creators involved with it, but I'm not going to pay for it. Their comedy shows that they had, like, I just canceled the subscription that, you know, within 48 hours. I was like, okay, I saw as much as I need to. It's just not enough, you know.
Yeah.
Like,
sorry.
Just literally pay for the psych movies,
right?
And then just cancel. Like, that's all.
I guess so.
That's how it was for me, because it's like psych is just kind of immortal. Like, I have yet to encounter anybody kind of like Community who has said I don't care for it.
Right. No, there's gonna be, like you say, there's gonna be like Band of Brothers. I mean, I've never met anybody who said, oh, you know what, that sucked.
Yeah, I've never heard anyone say boring or too long or pulled
that was crap.
Or the Rings. It's good, but it's not my thing. I've never.
No. And when did Amazing Stories, is that, and like you were saying, that's.
It was kind of just the anthology show, but yeah, it was kind of like, much like. It was interesting because of how many character actors would make guest spots on there.
Right.
I mean, and kind of like many of those shows, if you missed it, you missed it. It just kind of just never really got on that syndication bandwagon.
Nope. And like you say, we miss a lot of things because of it. Not anymore. That's a beautiful thing about technology now. Bam. So, my brother, where are you coming out of?
I am located in the thick of Dallas, Texas, where there's a lot of Kyles and Karens refusing to mask up. I got out of my comfort zone. It was cool seeing some Christmas lights and other stuff.
Last
winter. How about yourself? How did you enjoy New Year's and such?
Oh, it was amazing. You know, it's like I always look forward to getting into the new year and starting, not New Year's resolutions, but just, you know, reset. You know,
exactly. And we were so kind of consumed, you know, with all this other stuff. And I've been finding little small stuffs here, little small stuff I can correct. Okay, how about I cut this out of my diet? How about I go to work this way? I got Sirius XM as a Christmas gift, you know, with the first 3 months free. I was like, thank you.
Yeah.
This is another step. Cut out all the shitty radio in my life with something to my personal preference that plays the kind of music I actually want to hear.
Exactly.
And with some comedy channels. And I can go anywhere without losing a signal. This is, you know, that's
perfect.
And so many people just want to kind of just, like you say, oh, something costs too much. It's like, well, then you lose the right to complain because you don't want to invest in it. If you don't want to eat healthier, and realize it's going to probably be 40 plus bucks a month to eat healthier and save you a trip to the ER instead of whatever crap. Yeah. Sure, you can get it, but
No, you got to be willing to make the change. You got to be willing to put in the work.
You got to do the transition. You have to do the transition. And I get it. It is a pain in the ass. There are still some things where it's like, no, I'm just not going to make time for that.
But I'm going to complain about it. That's fine. No, man. So, yeah, that's same thing here. Just making all the little, and we're not talking major reboots here. We're talking, just a little bit of, a little bit of just like you said, just get the garbage out and
Yes.
Hell yeah. But in Washington it's
With Brazil kind of doing their own version of January 6th, I wouldn't be surprised if there's just some more just happened and that's not acceptable. And I think a lot more people are just going to, the bad apples out there are going to probably play more and more games. And
I hope so.
It's kind of going to go, I think, to the typical deal, kind of like with how district attorneys act. If you can't get them on this, you get them on another thing that gets them the boot. I think that's what it's going to be. If we can't get people like Marjorie Taylor Greene, out for being a crazy person, then we got to get them out for another way.
Oh yeah, we'll find a way.
Yeah,
we will.
Especially when you're stacking it with, some other people who are privy or excusing all this inappropriate behavior. But, and it's just kind of, one of my last jobs I had before I got to a good job that I do like, I went for the whole HR deal and it still backfired. They still said, you're the problem. We don't want to deal with it. And I was just like, okay, so I'll make sure to write you a crappy Indeed review. don't do any kind of, staffing agency sponsored gig. Because then you lose the right as a worker when something bad does happen and they don't want to correct it. But I like how Amblin's always changing and they're actually honoring.
Oh, man, evidently. You know what? I was not aware of that Amblin. I mean, I know.
But that's pretty good compared to other places. Because, you read about ABC Studios, how they had a lot of people complaining about stuff like Criminal Minds, like sex harassment stuff, like the cinematographer making inappropriate stuff and touching, PA's asses. It's like, why did that take 5 years? Great show, but inexcusable. Yeah. Fire that dude.
Yeah, it didn't take no damn 5 years. It took 5 years for them to finally deal with it. But,
right. We've all are tired of stories like the armorer is like, Baldwin murdered someone. I'm like, yes, he killed a man. He didn't intend to kill a man, just like Michael Massey did not intend to kill Brandon Lee on the set. But at the same time, why are they using blanks? Just use CGI. Fuck. I know it can be shitty, but just use it instead of just saying, I got to deal with it. Make a bunch of phone calls now and I'm going to have that on my conscience.
And here's a random bullet and there's a random fucking bullet and who's responsible for it and why is there any fucking bullets on the set?
It's like they almost wanted to set up half these celebs. Nick Cage, of all crazy people, even complained about low budget movie he was on. And yet this guy still gets a reference and people go, it's hearsay. I'm like, it's not hearsay if you got fired silently. it's kind of like, I just dealt with Off the Record, which gets, traffic tickets off your record. And it's just like, I still, at the end of the day, know what I did, which was, I drove a little fast and I got caught by a police officer who trusts the radar over my word. So it's interesting how people it's kind of like half of these, court cases we've seen with controversial people like Johnny Depp and everything. It's interesting how people like to pull an OJ. Well, he wasn't convicted. I'm like, it doesn't mean he didn't do anything bad or we don't trust them.
Yeah, no, it's ridiculous. I mean, and as we all know, they were both fucked up and doing fucked up shit.
Yeah, I've heard sketchy stuff about Amber Heard for the longest time, so I wasn't surprised. But this is where it's also just annoying is like, I was even telling my sister the other day, if we have to, if our mind can only be opened by watching a groundbreaking movie like Get Out or an atypical Law and Order episode, then something's already wrong. You should be very open to the fact that there's some imperfections that can't be dealt with, and that the world is not black and white. You know, it's gray.
It's never been black and white. And a lot of times it takes something like a movie to open people's eyes, like you say. And then they start bringing it to everybody else's attention. It's like, hey, did you know this?
Half these post-apocalyptic movies kind of predicted COVID. And I knew guys in high school back in the 2000s who were kind of like some of the guys portrayed in tonight's programs that we discussed. It's like, yeah, I knew douchebags like that who were definitely like the ones in maybe E.T. who would pick on, be the bully in the school, or be the guy, be that, like that person in War of the Worlds who wants to get on the freight by any means necessary, even if it means killing a civilian, you know?
Oh, hell yeah. Yep.
Half these Z grade apocalyptic movies actually have realistic ideas. They're just not well done, you know, but they're on the money in terms of how someone would act if they wanted a cure for whatever and just to get their hands on it.
Oh, no doubt. Like Homeboy in Titanic, you know, grabbing up those kid, that kid, and hey, this is mine. I'm getting on the boat.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Absolutely. And I got to applaud him for doing all these kind of expensive throwbacks to all these kinds of movies. And instead of just going with the atypical thing it's just funny how they produced ER for the longest time, but it kind of was just mainly John Wells's baby. And they were just doing the additional funding. Spielberg just provided the notes because he's like, hey, Mike Crichton, you gave me my blockbuster movie, you know, Jurassic Park. Yeah, I'll just give you my notes, which is this character survives the pilot, and you got yourself a hit show. It's just funny how they make just the little minor alterations. They don't want to impede on the creativity process, but they do want
to
give you what they think will make it successful and make it a crowd pleaser. And unfortunately, like you say, there just seem to be too many others who want to cater to the lowest common denominator. It's like, okay, just the star and that's it. It's like, well, the 70s approach doesn't really work nowadays, guys. It does, but it doesn't. Like, people will see it and then they'll bitch about it. And then I do hope that more people who kind of like the Blu-ray companies can kind of just scout out and see what people are actually saying instead of trying to influence the vote on social media.
Oh, no kidding. And then go out, you know, and then they, review bomb every fucking thing until it turns into dirt. And then everybody's like, oh, that must suck.
That must suck. Oh boy. Well, John, where can we find you on social media? And what do you blog about?
Oh, you know what? There's a number of different things that I have in the works, but nothing I can actually drop right now. I mean, I could, but it would be irresponsible.
You do some filmmaking?
No, just basically what I'm doing is just podcast stuff. Yeah. But let me tell you, I definitely have a lot of stuff I'm working on, but there's too much right now. In fact, that's the point. That's one of the things I've been talking about is, is cutting down a lot of what I'm trying to do and just start doing something. And so that's coming into the new year. That's what I'm going to be doing is, so I can get some stuff out there versus talking about getting some stuff out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Well, we're all struggling,
I'm going to stay in touch with you though. Let you know when all that comes to fruition.
Exactly.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a jack-